passe un bon artiste. Super, encore un but sensationnel. That's a brilliant bit of follow-up play by Mahé. Oh my goodness me, what a shot.
Sagolsen. Sagolsen setter det hen. Han setter den. De I semifinale.
Hello and welcome to the Uninformed Handball Hour. Today on the podcast, we have a very special guest in Vladlena Bobrovnikova from the Russian national team. We'll talk to her in depth about their first win of the tournament, life in the bubble, and working with Ambrose Martin. So plenty to discuss there. But first, let's look at Friday's results. It's France 24, Montenegro 23, Hungary 22, Croatia 24, Denmark 30, Slovenia 23. Chris, the biggest surprise is, of course,
Hungary bottling it again. Or, Brian, is it a surprise based on what you and Alex were saying in the preview podcast? Maybe it's not a surprise after all.
Yeah, I didn't call this now, but I think that's a massive surprise for everyone. I mean, just going on how the Croatians are acting going into this tournament, they're here just having a good time. They're really relaxed. They're here having fun. They put up a dance video earlier on. You can just tell by the way they're going around the hotel. They're just delighted to be here. And they played today with absolutely zero stress. And the Hungarian team, yeah, I don't know what you could say about it exactly. But have you any theories?
They played completely full of stress from what I've seen. Now, I think like you, I was focusing on the France-Montenegro game at the same time. So I've seen extended highlights of the Croatia-Hungary game and tried to get a real feel for it. But I mean, yeah, nobody expected this. Croatia came into this championship having lost every game of the last two Euros, being one of the bottom-ranked sides every time. In our preview podcast, we didn't give them a chance. And, you know, I don't know if Hungary gave them a chance or what they were doing, because I don't know what the excuse is. You can't really throw the not playing together excuse at this Hungary team, because the backcourt play together every single day. They all play for FTC, or in the case of Zuzana Tomori, she plays for Siofok now, but she's been playing for FTC over the years, knows them inside out. And yeah, it really just makes no sense to me. It's a team that, as we said before, we've been waiting for them to break out over the last 2 years. They had a very promising Euro last time, but this is a complete disaster for them, I think it's fair to say. And they looked like in the opening 10-15 minutes like they had the game in control. They were looking pretty free and easy. There was this great goal where it was a lobbed pass over across the court from Tomori to Noemi Hafra, where she scored her one goal of the game in the end and really wasn't able to contribute after that. Now, the Croatian coach Nenad Zostaric credited his defense being the turning point in this game. Also, the goalkeeper for Croatia made 10 saves, seven of which came in the second half. That was Teja Pijevic. But at the end of the day, I think it was a case of Hungary bottling it. They took the lead with 14 minutes left to play, and then they didn't score a goal for the next 10 minutes. And you can't go 10 minutes in the final quarter of a game without scoring and expect to get away with it. No flow in attack, no real explanation why for these players. And they're in serious danger of getting knocked out of the championship here.
We talked about it a little bit in the preview, and I mentioned we talked about players like Tomori being one of the senior players, of course, and then someone like Kovacic actually being a senior player now at this stage, because she has second most caps in the team. And when you look at the squad, I don't know what you think now, but there's a feeling I get that they're definitely not lacking talent. They've plenty of that. You can see it just by looking at the squad list. They've plenty of young talent and plenty of varied talent as well, but they seem to kind of lack maybe a leader figure in the squad. I'm not talking really about a playmaker now. I'm talking really about a leader figure. And that's why they brought in someone like Anita Gerbets maybe in as this counsellor role. But maybe on the court, there just seem to be lacking. I know someone who could, in those hairy moments, kind of stand up and kind of lead by example. And I feel like when I look through that squad there, plenty of talent, but I'm not really sure they have that one character that can really stand up and kind of pull things together.
Yeah, so they're in serious danger now. I mean, the fortunate thing for them is they've got Serbia next in 2 days' time, about 20 hours after Serbia are due to face the Netherlands on Saturday. So today, as this podcast comes out, they're a rescheduled game because Serbia arrived on Thursday. One of the players tested positive for COVID. Now a second player has as well. So the team is in isolation and they're being tested on Saturday morning. If everything is clear, which is hopefully going to be the case after this podcast is released, then the game goes ahead. So that's a bit of a lifeline for Hungary at the moment. But as you said, really missing a leader. And I don't want to take the credit away from Croatia, who scored their first victory at this level in three competitions. And someone who really stood out for me there was Katarina Jezic, who is, I think, traditionally a line player. She was playing in on the line at the beginning, but a real show of her being the leader was at the end when they needed to hold on to the ball. She was there playing center back. So she was like, she was just making sure that the ball wasn't going to be given away. They weren't going to do anything stupid at the end. She was 3 from 3 from the line as well. So great for Croatia. Congratulations to them. And they could be in this competition for an extended stay. Quickly looking at the other two results, France managed to survive against Montenegro. What was your reaction to that?
Well, I mean, it's no secret that France never really start tournaments well. And I think the opening 20 minutes, I think almost was to be expected. You could almost have bet your house on the fact that Montenegro were going to come bursting out of the gates and take an early lead. So I think overall, the fact that France took a win and they know they're such slow starters, I think that's a big result for them. And it was a weird kind of situation after the game where it was almost like both teams were quite happy with with how things went. I think Montenegro, look, the trouble that they've been through with the last 10 days changing coach, that's a big change for everybody there. And I think they didn't look bad. I mean, as Alex said in the first podcast, sometimes when you bring in a new coach, you're forced to play really simply. And that's exactly what they were doing in the first half. It was quite slow, but it was really effective what they were doing. And they were playing well to the line and they were focusing on a lot of their play on the wings. And I heard Kim saying that in timeouts as well. Work it into the wings because they know that's where their strongest positions are with the two wingers, yeah. With Medvedev and Radicevic on both wings. And they both had excellent games. Now, Montenegro could have won it in the end, but they didn't. But I think, given the whole situation, I think they'll be, yeah, as happy as you can be with a loss. France, on the other hand, were awful for about 40 minutes, I would say, compared to their normal standard. But they got it done in the end. And that's what great teams can do. They can play those bad games and still get a result. And there were some glimmers in there of some excellent play. That goal by Melanie Nocandi, I think, was one which really stood out to me. And she's going to be an absolutely incredible player. And she already is an incredible player, but she's a real, real talent, I think, for the French squad. Yeah, so a bumpy start for France, but a very precious win. Because if they lost that, then they'd also be in hot water.
True. Something that this game reminded me of a lot of 2 years ago, the championship they won, was the coach, Olivier Crumbles, really using his entire squad. And I think a fascinating stat from this game is that they had 12 different goal scorers. They only scored 24 goals. They only took 28 shots, apparently, on goal. So that says a lot about Montenegro's defense as well, with blocks and turnovers. But 24 goals and 12 different goal scorers. And it was Aissatou Koyate, the right back, who I hadn't really seen much at all of in the past. She came in late on, scored 3 goals and won a couple of penalties. And I think she really turned the game on its head. Yeah, oddly enough, as you said, a game that both sides would be relatively happy with. France, just because they've, you know, survived and they know themselves that they have terrible starts. So as we got in our conversation with Estelle Enzeminko and Saraba Dembele, the fact they didn't have any test matches could be the key for them. No more test matches, and they'll win their first game. Yeah.
You could really see that they had no test matches, but the amount of fumbles and bad shooting and everything at the beginning, it really was a bit of a mess. Like, it wasn't the prettiest handball, but I think we kind of knew this going into this whole the tournament, that the first matches were all going to be a bit all over the place. But saying that now, I think Denmark probably looked the sharpest of the day today. I think they really looked like they were well set up. Jesper Jensen has, it's quite beautiful, the handball they play. It's quite dynamic, and they really have very mobile players. And to say that against the Slovenian team, which are normally known for the most mobile players ever, is quite an achievement. But Anna Gross really wasn't in any good shape today. You could see that she couldn't get any up to speed at all. She has that seemingly a groin injury. And that's a tricky one, because the groin injury didn't get any better today, you know. So for the next game, I think she could be even in worse shape. So that was a big blow for them.
Yeah, she mentioned in the post-match interview that she didn't feel it. Like, it didn't get any worse. But I think, as you said, it was clear that she was kind of protecting it a little bit. The fact that she hadn't trained for the last week and was coming into the game, there were times she was playing out in the right wing. You know, I think mostly just to kind of be on the court, but not push too much. But I have to agree with you about Denmark looking very, very smooth. Very impressed with how they played. And you could really tell that they had faced Norway twice last week, and they had an opportunity to work out the kinks. And, you know, this is the first championship Jesper Jensen has with the team. Looked really good. Impressed with the wingers. We know always that Trine Østergaard on the right wing is going to be fantastic. She always is. 5 from 6 today. But out in the left wing, you had Lerke Nolso, is the only left winger in that squad. So a big sign of confidence that she's the only one chosen in the whole squad on the left wing. She had a very good game as well, scoring 6 goals. And then the backcourt really spread the love a bit. And Christina Jorgensen, who I mentioned in the preview podcast as the one who was going to step up into that centre-back position, she had a good game as well with 5 goals. Overall, looking pretty sharp, the Danish team. And it makes this group, which we knew was going to be super interesting, with Denmark, Slovenia, Montenegro, and France, it's developing even more so into the group to watch out for.
Mm. It's going to be tricky now. My prediction of Slovenia will beat one of those teams. Now, when you take Anna Gross out of the situation, Slovenia come a little bit more predictable. And you could really see that Denmark in the first half were really crowding out Anna. You had some moments from Barbara Lazovic, and Elizabeth Amorgi made her debut, scored her first few goals. But really, once you take the X factor out of Slovenia, they're a lot more manageable.
Well, I think she showed a bit of those flashes of brilliance, Gross, and I think she probably just wants to work her way back into it. They've got France next on Sunday. And then the group final for them will be Montenegro on Tuesday. And I reckon she'll be giving it 100% by then.
Okay, so that's enough from Friday's action. Let's now jump into our interview with Vladlena Bobrovnikova. So after your first win yesterday, was that, I mean, obviously it was a massive game for you personally. Did that feel like, or before going into the game, did you feel like you had a bit of a point to prove personally going into yesterday's game?
You know, playing for the national team every time is something special for me, because you represent your country, you know. And now I feel that I'm the player with more experience, you know. I won the Olympic Games. I feel this responsibility, I think, in the team. But I need to go first, you know, to show everybody that we can win. And I feel this.
Yeah, and you definitely proved it. A Player of the Match award and a really big win. But the overall preparation must have been very difficult. Not having training games, not being together as a squad for a long time, and even just getting to Denmark in a difficult situation. How did you prepare mentally for the challenges of that first game?
Yeah, it not was easy play first game, because 1 year we was without some game, friendly game. Last game when we play, it was in Kumamoto in World Championship. So for us yesterday, it was, you know, a little bit nervous. We start like this, you know, defense attack, run. Don't make the good defense, cannot to make counterattack. It was a nervous beginning. But, you know, this this moment with this Corona moments, and it's not easy to play. But you know, we are athlete. We adapt very fast and for all conditions. If somebody said, okay, you need to stay in a hotel and you cannot go outside, okay, we adapt. So only like this, we need to be now.
And so within the game, you mentioned that the start was a little bit shaky, a little bit nervous.
Yeah.
What actually changed for you as a team to get that big win?
I think we start to feel our rhythm in the game. We start to make good defense. The goalkeeper start to save, and I think it was key. I think the good defense and after good attack. But it's normal, you know, first game in this European, it's for me, for example, when some journalists ask me, you want to go, for example, in the European, you want that they make this tournament. I said, of course, because for me, it's some big, you know, big moment for the old handball planet, to go there, to enjoy this moment. And I think, of course, it was first game and, many girls in our team, in my team, maybe young or not had this so big experience. Maybe they was so a little bit nervous. It's normal. It's a woman handball.
So do you being kind of more of a senior player in the squad now, do you feel like you have to talk to some of these younger players and maybe give them some advice on maybe settling their nerves before big games like that yesterday?
Of course, I maybe go to some players, some girls, and say, go, girls, come on. In Russia, it's davai, davai, to give them my power, some energy, positive energy, because I'm a positive person. And I want to give to everybody this, you know, charging battery.
And how do you keep that spirit up? Because obviously, at the start, okay, there's some nerves and you work into it. But how do you continue that momentum for these 2 weeks, which will get more difficult and more difficult day by day?
You know, we speak with Ambrose, with our coach, and he said to girls, we need to go step by step. From one game to two games, second game, third game. Now today we have the training and we concentrate about the game of tomorrow against the Czech Republic. And I think we think only, you know, one step, because if you think, oh, maybe I go in the final, or we don't have no doubt, and we think only for the next game. I think this game against Spanish, it was, you know, we can make put this in our pocket of experience pocket, you know, and for all my team, I think it's good. This good victory, they felt more secure, I think, after this winning.
I think one of the most surprising things to me when I was watching the game yesterday was during the timeouts, Ambrose Martin was speaking in Spanish and then he has a translator into Russian. I don't know if has he always done this, or is this something new that he does during the games, or how is the communication with him normally?
You know, for example, I speak Italian because my husband from Italy, and for me, easier maybe to understand him. When he was in Rostov, we speak only English, but now we have the second coach and he's lived in Spain and he make the translation. So I think we adapt, and also many girls understand the Spanish from Ambrose. I think we adapt good.
Okay, so if you see him in the corridor in the morning, you're like, buenos dias, are you talking to us?
Buenos dias, Ambrose. Bravo.
And how is the general life within the bubble, your day-to-day? How do you keep yourself entertained and focused?
I know before we came here, many people say some scary story. Oh, you need to stay in the hotel. And how you will be there? Stay in the hotel. You cannot go out from a hotel. It's you know, the life going here, and every year when I go in the World Champion, the European Champion, the day going so fast because you have training. you have video, you go on the lunch, you speak with maybe your family, and after all the day of the day finish, you know. And so we don't think and don't concentrate about, oh, now it's COVID, we cannot go out, and okay, we adapt, like I said before.
And you get more time to sleep, so that's always good.
Yeah.
But so the preparation itself then, apart from having no friendly matches, was it that different to then going to other tournaments?
I feel this, yeah. It's not not easy to come here. We was in the some camp in Moscow and did the training, but it's not the same, you know. The training, we try to make, you know, some imitation of the game between us, but it's not the same totally. If you have friendly game, you know, it's like, for example, we have new playing dress, yeah, and when you go in the friendly game, you try this, you know, like little small things, but you try this playing dress and you feel more comfortable. I don't know, but yesterday it was totally everything first, you know. Every first time we tried the dress, first time maybe for some girls who go on the some tournament, big tournament like this, and it's strange that we don't have the people around, the fans. It, for me, it's so strange because I hate this. I like, you know, this atmosphere, the people shout, the people cheer. I like this, but I'm a little bit sad about that we don't have the fans around.
Yeah, so you'd rather have even playing against away fans and fans who are against you than playing with no fans at all, I presume. Even fans who might be booing you.
Yeah. You know, it was funny when we was in first training, we go in the arena, and that was some cartoon people, you know. I don't know how this is, Finta people. It was so strange.
So you said you had the preparation camp in Moscow, and obviously a lot of the team comes from two clubs, which is CSKA and Rostov. Does that help you to get that cohesion in the team, to work together really well?
Now, of course, we know the girls also from CSKA. I know these girls many, many years, and we played in the national team together. And I'm very happy that in Russia we have second team who represent Russia in the Champions League. It's so important the girls have the experience to play these tough games in Champions League. And I think it's helped a lot of our national team. But we, the girls from Rostov and the girls from CSKA, we stay together, and we can make many good things.
And of course, coming into the tournament, you lost three very important players. Do you feel like there are players now in the team who need to up their level, or you can feel that they're upping their level, trying to replace the three big players that you lost coming into the tournament?
Of course, it's difficult to lose these girls. They were so important for our team. But, you know, you cannot, for example, yesterday, you cannot to go in the arena and think, oh, how we play, oh, how we go in the game, how we play defense without these girls. We don't have this thinking. We understand that all responsibility go here on our shoulder, and we need to play to show everybody. But you know, I read some journalists from YKF make some top list of a national team before this European Championship, and we I think in the end of all list, not on first, on second, on in third place. And when I read this, I think, oh, why like this? I'm a little bit angry about journalists from YKF.
That wasn't us. That wasn't us.
Okay.
Definitely wasn't us.
Okay. I think we have really, it's the now in our team is the best players from Russia, from all big Russia, the best players now in this moment. I think the girls, Anna Senya, Navya Hirivaya, Elena Mikhalichenko, I think they so sad to not be here with us. And we send the message every time yesterday after the game. They wrote out on our general group and girls, bravo, going like this and cheer us.
And I think lastly, you received the Player of the Match award and the big poster that comes with it. What do you do with that? Where do you put it?
I have now in the room. yeah, because with girls we spoke. And what is this? What is this? I think it's like, you know, some, I don't know if you know what is this. Maybe you can answer me. But I think it's some money who go in the summer in Africa for the to help women and kids for the water, I think.
Yeah, you don't want to win too many of them. Then you won't be able to get into your room anymore. I think your room would be full of Player of the Match awards.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks so much. And best of luck with the game against the Czech Republic.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
See you soon.
Thank you.
All right. Ta-ta.
So a great chat there with Vladlena Bobrovnikova by you, Alex, and Brian. And some very interesting topics covered there. What stood out for you from the chat?
Going into that interview, we're going to ask about who is the leader that has stepped up. And quite clearly from the first question, Bobrovnikova really came out and said that she made an effort to be a leader in this team. And you saw that clearly from her play, where she had an incredible game. Only 4 goals, but 7 assists. Clearly, Player of the Match. And just how she talked about lifting the spirits and lifting the confidence of the players around her is really telling about she knows she's an experienced player and needs to bring that most in this tournament.
Yeah, true. The way she played yesterday was very assured. And I noticed that as well in the last couple of weeks of the EHF Champions League, where she basically came in at left back and became the starting left back for the first time in a while because Anna Sen got injured, and she played with so much assurance, does nothing wrong as well, doesn't try to over egg the pudding. You know, she knows that she isn't the biggest shooter in the world, but she gets the breakthrough goals, she sets up opportunities well, and then occasionally she goes for it from long range. And it was very similar against Spain as well, which I was very impressed with. And overall, the depth and the assuredness of that whole Russian team, I think, caught everyone by surprise.
Completely. It caught me by surprise. I had mentioned before in our preview podcast that I knew they had depth, but it's the way that they play together. And it's even more impressive to think that they haven't played together in a competitive match for almost a year. The way a lot of their goals came through breakthroughs and just continually passing the ball. They played a real simple style where they just attacked the gaps and eventually the ball just landed with a player through on goal. And they continued and continued to do that. And defensively, at the start of the game, I was looking at them being, this is clearly a team that hasn't played together. That center block between Dmitrieva and Mikheyeva was a disaster for the first 10 minutes. They were giving away 2 minutes. People were breaking through. It was an absolute disaster. And I really didn't see that comeback coming of them becoming so solid throughout the whole game.
Really fascinating how they just turned it on all of a sudden. And it wasn't just Bobrovnikova, also Dmitrieva, who you mentioned there, playing in that center block, also in the center back in attack, probably the only one of the three who would have been the starting player if there was a full squad. But I think we can leave that whole full squad and talking about injuries behind now, because as Vladlena said herself, you know, they just need to adapt. And I think that was the most impressive aspect of what she was talking about in an interview, is that they accept what's happening, not just with the players that are injured, but also with COVID and everything around this championship, and just not moaning about it, just getting on with the job and focusing on how they're going to perform. And I think that really stood them well yesterday against Spain. Two other things I want to bring up from that interview. First of all, the Grundfos thing, because I don't think she really knew what she was doing there. For any players listening, once you get that award, it's actually like a donation to provide opportunities for women and children in Africa, which is something that Grundfos are doing. And I think they've had it for a couple of events now. I think it's a nice thing, because players don't need a watch or a ball or something like that after the game. handball players, they have enough. They might as well do something good for humankind with their Player of the Match award. And second of all, and I really thought this was juicy, Vladlena coming at Adrian Costeu and his power ranking. You know, we have to leave that one in because that's what you want at the end of the day, right? When you're writing these articles. I mean, I've done my fair share of rankings and ratings in the past. And for Adrian, now he knows that the Russian team saw his rating, putting them in eighth place before the championship. Already jumping up the power rankings, I'm sure. And I'm sure we'll give Adrian Costeu a chance to have his word at some point over the next 3 weeks on the podcast.
A team that was quite high up in the power rankings before the tournament was Spain, the beaten loser in this opening game. And really, it was a disjointed performance. The team was really annoyed at themselves. I listened to the post-game interview with Gutierrez, and she was asked, can you take any positives from this game? And she said, no, not a single one. And that they have to just move forward. And I think it's a tough challenge for Spain now, because with the way this tournament is set up, this game counts towards the semifinal. You would expect Russia and Spain to be the two teams to go through to the main round. And within that main round, Spain have already lost 2 points. So they have an uphill battle. And it'll be really interesting to see how they respond to that and if they can come back strong in their next game. Another game that probably counts towards the main round, it was the Romania-Germany game. And that was one where we were really split before in our preview podcast. I had Romania kind of as underdogs coming from this kind of COVID quarantine to come in and still surprise Germany. But Chris, you had Germany who came out 22-19 winners. Were you impressed by Germany?
I was impressed with them for the first 10 minutes. I thought like they went 7-1 ahead in the opening minutes. And I thought, okay, they're actually going to fly through this one because they looked really strong. Romania looked like they literally woke up, and to be fair, they probably literally just got out of quarantine, but they really had a sluggish start to the game. Cristina Niagu had one goal from 8 shots right at the beginning. Germany had handled her very well, and they just like they were going to cruise to victory. Then slowly but surely, Romania started to claw their way back and show that they have a bit of depth in this team as well. There are some pretty decent players, particularly in the backcourt. You know, you've got Eliza Bukeski, who has done well at these championships in the past, and Cristina Laszlo, who is a rising star for Romania as well. So they battled back fairly well. But in the end, I think Germany, although it wasn't an incredibly impressive game from them, they did look the more comfortable team overall in a game which didn't catch the imagination. You know, the second half was 9 goals apiece. So Germany had basically got the job done in that first half. And it never really looked too much in danger in the second half. To be fair to Germany, though, on their side, still at this stage, we're missing their head coach, Hent Groner. So he's just arrived into Denmark. And all things considered, I think they'll be very happy with that. Romania, looking at the way they started, probably feel like they have let something slip here. You know, they didn't have a great performance. A lot of factors which make that understandable. They only lost by 3 goals in the end. It could have been a very different case for them. And now, all of a sudden, Romania have to battle for their survival, to be fair, because they're playing Poland next, and Germany move on to face Norway.
And it has to be said that Cristina Niagu was completely off. You mentioned that Germany did a good job, but 4 goals from 14 shots is a pretty tough start to a tournament for Niagu. Why do you think she had such a poor game?
Well, I think at the start, she tried to take it upon herself to just drag the team into the game, because that one goal from 8 shots happened pretty early on in the first half. And when Germany streaked into this lead at the beginning, Romania weren't getting anything going in attack. So you'd understand why Niagu tried to just fire in the shots herself. And then at the beginning of the second half, she started to get a couple of goals. And then she started to get a bit unlucky as well. She hit the post a couple of times. There was one time she hit the post and the rebound came out to a line player. She scored. I think it was just a case of a disjointed team in attack, quite literally giving the ball to the best player, which is probably what happens with Niagu at the best of times. And this was not the best of times.
Yeah, and you really can't blame Romania really coming out of quarantine and straight into a game. It's a tough one. Mm. The other games on the day, we saw Norway actually struggle a little bit against a completely dismantled Poland team, who really put it up against, you know, the big favourites of the competition for maybe the first 20 minutes. But Norway showed their class. I think they'll have bigger challenges in this competition. And Sweden, in our preview, we really almost disregarded the fourth team in almost every group. But we saw that Poland put up a good match against Norway, despite the result. And Sweden really struggled against the Czech Republic.
Yeah, first of all, on the Norway game, the second half performance from the team was much better. And the goalkeeper, Rikke Granlund, who is basically the fourth choice goalkeeper, she got an opportunity and played very, very well. So she made a case for herself to stay in the squad, perhaps ahead of Emily Sando, when and if Katrina Lunde and Solberg come into the squad. My personal delight for this is that I had to do a bunch of score predictions for the EHF-Euro website, and I predicted 35-22 for Norway and Poland, so I got the exact score for that prediction. And that's part of a prediction game which anyone can take part in on the website. Just have a look for it, and there are prizes to be won with every round. So even if you miss the first round, it's no harm. Hopefully I'm in with a chance of winning something after that perfect score. We'll see. Anyway, and for the Sweden-Czech Republic game, yeah, there was a stage early in that second half where Czech Republic were leading by 3 goals. So they did more than just scare this Swedish side. They actually looked pretty comfortable for the vast majority of it. And this is with them missing quite a few players as well. Iveta Luzimova, who is a player who has been dragging them through these championships over the years, she's out at the moment, and she's been their top scorer over the years. They still managed to do very well without her. And in particular, Kudlatskova in goal, who she spoke to Paul Bray in the post-match interview and basically said, you know, there's only so much I can do. You know, she made 13, 14 saves and the team still couldn't win. So she wasn't blaming herself for the loss in the end. But Sweden, yeah, there's a lot, I think a lot of upside still for them. As we talked about in our preview podcast, 5 players who were brand new to tournament handball brought into this squad. And in goal as well, they struggled a fair bit. Filippa Iden didn't have a great game. And eventually Jessica Rida, who came in, got to grips with the game. Besides that, they looked fairly okay when it comes to the backcourt. The line players, I think, as we spoke about, are going to be their biggest weapon. Lynn Blom was the player of the game, 5 goals from 6 for her. And they also have Anna Lagerqvist, who didn't play much in attack. But if they manage to rotate those two and maybe on occasion use both of them in attack, that could be the way forward for them. A bit of problems on the wings for Sweden. But most importantly for them in this opening game, they managed to come away with the victory. So I don't think they'll be too bothered by the fact that it was just a 4-goal win in the end.
And looking forward into the next couple of days, and particularly across these two groups, we have 2 interesting games. One is Spain-Sweden, where actually Spain are fighting for their life. Lose this game and they're probably out of the running for a semi-final spot. A lot of pressure on the Spanish team. The other game, probably Germany-Norway, is the most exciting out of Group D. And we'll really see if this Germany team is for real. And if Norway can keep rolling in this competition.
Both happening on Saturday, which is when we're releasing this podcast. So a big day of handball to come. Starts at 4 o'clock as well with Poland, Romania, and then goes all the way to 2 games at 8:30, Spain and Sweden, and the rescheduled Netherlands against Serbia. So a big day of handball to look forward to at EHF Euro 2020. So from myself, Chris O'Reilly, from Alex Kulesh, and from Brian Campion, it's goodbye. And as we say in Denmark, Alex,
vi ses.